Hello, I'm George Takei, and you're listening to Life Minute.
One of America's most beloved actors and activists, George Takei, recently released a new full-color graphic memoir titled It Rhymes with Takei. The beautifully illustrated autobiography reveals for the first time ever the full story of his life in the closet, his decision to come out at the age of 68, and the way that moment transformed everything. The 88-year-old living legend stopped by our Life Minute studios recently to tell us all about it. This is a Life Minute with George Takei.
George Takei, thank you so much for being with us at Life Minute.
Oh, good to be here.
Oh, 87 years young.
87. No, I'm even older than that.
Are you 88?
I'm 88 years
88.
Old.
88? Oh my goodness.
Just a few weeks ago, amazing. I celebrated my...
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Oh. And the Japanese have this lore. 88 is the age at which you enter your second childhood. And so Brad helped me celebrate by inviting all our friends and relatives to a beautiful luncheon, dressed me up in a golden happy coat, the Japanese, and a golden hat. And I entered my second childhood, so here I am.
Oh, that's amazing. Oh, it's such an honor to have you here at your second childhood. I love that. It's beautiful.
A few days from my 80th birthday. On Star Trek, we had this gesture that we call the Vulcan greeting. It means live long and prosper. And so I've lived 88. That's considered reasonably long. I'm reasonably prosperous because I have a brand new book that's coming out, which is about my life, 88 years worth.
Amazing. You have some stories to tell. Tell us about it. It's beautiful.
Well, here's the book, the cover, and the title is It Rhymes with Takei. Now, I want to challenge our potential book buyers. What does that title mean? It rhymes with Takei. Many people mispronounce my surname. They call me Takei. So this is my opportunity to correct them. Mm-hmm. It's pronounced Takei. However, Takei is a legitimate Japanese word, which means expensive. So they'll have to pay up if they want to insist that I'm expensive. But Takei rhymes with other words like day, say, may, play, gay. Oh, gay. That must, is it about George being gay? It's about my closeted life. I came out at 68 years old, and I released all the closeted me that came running out of there.
Wow. Why did it take so long?
Do you know what closeted means? It means I'm gay, but I didn't want the world to know, particularly because I'm an actor, and I'm dependent on public popularity. So I was creating the impression that I'm not gay. And that at 68 years old, I came out because I was so angry at some of these hypocritical politicians, and the worst of it of them happened to be the governor of our state. I felt guilty because there were all these other people who were sacrificing their jobs, their careers, some of them their families, to be out there advocating for equality for gays and lesbians. And I was benefiting from their activism. In 2005, the activism of these others was starting to produce results. And the California legislature passed the Marriage Equality Bill, which meant that gays, lesbians, bisexual people could marry each other. And I've been together with my partner, Brad, for almost 40 years now. And now we could at least have the dignity of being legally married, except that our governor didn't think so. He was a governor who ran for public office saying, I'm from Hollywood, Arnold Schwarzenegger. I've worked with the gays and lesbians, and some of my best friends are gay people, creating the illusion that he was liberal, open, and supportive of gay people. But when the bill, the marriage equality bill, passed both houses of our state legislature, the Senate and the Assembly, and it landed on his desk, and his signature was the only thing that was needed, he vetoed it. And I was so angry that I decided I'm going to come out and get at this hypocritical governor who has no business being in public office.
Wow, wow. And it worked. You're instrumental in helping people feel, you know, that they can come out too. You're kind of a beacon of hope.
I wanted to get that hypocrite out of office and have my piece criticizing him. I partnered up with the Human Rights Campaign, a group that advocates for LGBTQ people, and went on a nationwide speaking tour against Arnold Schwarzenegger specifically, but for marriage equality.
What made you, after so many years, like, was it very difficult being an actor? Like, what was it like being gay?
Well, I'm Asian American. I have this face. So the opportunities would be limited to those roles. But I was lucky. Luck plays a big part in that. And thanks to the good fortune that I have, good luck, I landed a role on Star Trek. It became a very popular series. And blessed by that, I became a name.
That's amazing. I love it. I love it. Oh, really, perseverance. I can't believe you waited that long. Did you feel like, I mean, your life must have been like it just started again, you know?
It did feel like that. Yeah. It was a new, different start in my life. Yeah. But I had that success that I did have because if I were out when I started my acting career, I probably would not have had an acting career, because you could not be known that you're a gay person and hope to be cast in shows. There was that societal prejudice against that. So I'm glad that I was closeted. It was a strategically wise thing to be doing. But I'm also glad that we helped open up American society to be a better, more accepting, and a much more equal and fair society. But now we're engaged in another challenge with the same kind of issue that we had when I was a child in prison, because we look like this. We look just like the people that bombed Pearl Harbor. When we're Americans, we were categorized as enemy aliens. The Enemy Alien Act, you recognize that sound? The Enemy Alien Act, we're hearing it very regularly today, being used by our current administration. I call that leader a Klingon in the White House. And because of that, we are having all the turmoil, uncertainty, and the chaos in Washington now.
I know, it's a shame. It's all these years later and we're still dealing with things that we dealt with so long ago. Your childhood, I've read somewhere, you considered yourself an overachiever?
As a child?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Quiet overachiever? Ten, of course. And you've dealt with wartime, of course, racism. What was that like?
In the 60s, 70s, 80s, there were many, many vital issues of our time. There was the civil rights movement going on. And I knew that my childhood was based on racism. When Pearl Harbor was bombed, we looked just like the people that bombed Pearl Harbor, but we're Americans. My parents were born and raised and educated here. We're Americans, and we had nothing to do with Pearl Harbor, but the racism in this country put us into those barbaric prison camps simply because we looked like the people that bombed Pearl Harbor. We have that heritage. African Americans have that heritage of slavery, prejudice, of segregation, of having to struggle for it. So I know that history. And so having come from that, even though I was closeted about my most personal issue because I wanted to protect my career, I was active in all these other social issues, the civil rights movement, the peace movement during the Vietnam War. I was an activist because when I was a teenager, my father taught me about American democracy. It's active participation in our American citizenship. He said, he quoted it to me often, Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, that phrase, ours is a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Those are noble words. That's what makes our democracy wonderful, good. But, he said, the weakness of American democracy is also in those words, of the people, by the people, for the people, because people are fallible human beings. Even the President of the United States is a fallible human being. We make mistakes. And so it's important for people who understand our democracy. They have a responsibility as citizens to actively participate in democracy. And he urged all three of his children. I was the oldest. I have a younger brother and a youngest sister. And we became, at my father's urging, at school active. We joined clubs, supported charitable causes, and I ran for a student government office, became student body president in middle school, senior board president in high school. And my father, when I was in my late teens, took me to the Adlai Stevenson for President campaign headquarters and introduced me to electoral politics. And so as an adult, I've been active in presidential campaigns, U.S. Senate campaigns, campaign for mayor of Los Angeles. So I was practicing good citizenship to be a better American. And so I become a proselytizer for all Americans to become responsible citizens and take on the responsibilities of citizenship.
Excellent. Beautiful. How important is it, do you feel it is, to use your voice? You have a platform, you know, obviously.
Well, you don't need to have a platform as I do. My career and my previous activism has given me a platform. Even without platform, in a democracy, we need everybody who is concerned about our society to participate. We have elections coming, and sometimes horrible people get elected into office, and we are paying the price for that now. It's for everybody to participate in an election. Volunteering for campaigns when there's a horrific tragedy, care boxes. These are all jobs of a good citizen to be a participant in our democracy.
Excellent. I kind of want to know what you tell people that are still in the closet that just like are too afraid. What would you tell them, somebody that's just afraid?
Well, you are equal. I was in the closet protecting my career for most of my adult life. I was 68 when I came out. That's very late. It's nowadays, young people are coming out in their teens, some maybe even earlier. If they're still in the closet today, there's something wrong because most of us are all out. But what I discovered when I came out, I was prepared to find a different career. But instead, they started casting me in one TV series after another as gay George Takei. And so coming out as gay was good for my career. It had a new resurgence. You can't predict what the future holds. Yeah. Surprising things happen, even though you bite the bullet and gird your loins and come out prepared for that disaster, need to find a different career.
Yeah.
And the career that you've established becomes much more accepting and productive.
Yeah. So what was it like, you know, your big break in Star Trek, and was it difficult being, you know, a gay man, an Asian gay man at that time?
Well, I was very lucky. Luck plays a big part in the acting business, particularly because I'm a very specialized acting type. But Gene Roddenberry came up with this a wonderful idea, a picture of the future. He created a Starfleet made up of people from all over the galaxy, people of different backgrounds, different histories, different vantage point, coming together and working in concert as a team. I was fortunate enough to be cast in that, together with people like Nichelle Nichols, who was the first African-American woman to be cast in a regular role in a television series. We had a character who was of Russian ancestry at a time of a Cold War. And we had a Vulcan, an alien person, pointy-eared and brilliant and all-knowing, great wisdom, but totally devoid of humor. And so there's humor there. And all of us working on Starfleet as a team.
That was a pretty progressive show then, when you think about it.
It took place in the 22nd century. So it was progressive, and it was based on Gene Roddenberry's optimistic view of the human future. It doesn't seem like today the same kind of problems that we've had in the 20th century is repeating itself in America today. So it was kind of prescient. Gene Roddenberry was the creator, and he told me about this acronym that defines what Star Trek is about, IDIC, I-D-I-C, infinite diversity in infinite combinations. And first of all, the makeup of the primary cast personifies that. Infinite diversity in infinite combinations. His feeling was diversity, people of different backgrounds, different experiences, different colors, culture, coming together, working in concert, contributing their specialty, their knowledge, their vantage point on an issue, all of those things being brought together and working as a team together is how one reaches success and society becomes stronger for it. Infinite diversity, infinite combinations, working together in concert is what makes the Starship Enterprise the progressive, successful starship that it has been.
It's amazing that you're on that show and that's been your theme your whole life, isn't it? It's crazy.
That we have a life?
That's been your theme your whole life. Like,
Absolutely.
Did he know that about you when he hired you for the role? Did he know that you were such an advocate?
He was looking for that kind of diversity, not necessarily. And so we had the white North American as a captain, and he wasn't an American. He was a Canadian from Montreal, French speaking, although he didn't speak French. He was Anglophone. Bill Shatner.
Bill Shatner. Do you still talk to him at all?
Well, our show has not been on for quite some time now. I was a young man in my 20s and 30s.
Do you keep in touch with any of them?
We occasionally meet at Star Trek conventions, but right. It's not as frequently as it used to be. We have many subsequent generations of Star Trek.
Yes, sir.
But it's that diversity coming together that made Star Trek, or Starship Enterprise, the successful and engaging. You know, diversity is what makes society interesting, as well as having all armed with all that wisdom and knowledge and experience.
Yes, it's amazing. It's amazing. Do you think, did anyone know in the acting community on the show or that you were gay? Do you think they knew?
I had many acting colleagues in Star Trek, and when you're working together for 3 years together, you know, you get to know each other well. Actors are sophisticated people, and a good number of my work colleagues knew that I was gay, but they also know the society, that it would be difficult for me if they broadcast the fact that I'm gay. They're working with a gay actor. And they're friends, and they didn't want to hurt me. And so they knew, but they kept quiet. But in the book, I talk about some incidents where it's revealed to me that they knew, but they were covering it up. And I am so grateful that they were such good friends and such discreet good friends.
Oh, that's beautiful. How did you become a star? Like, how did you even get into acting?
Well, I always wanted to be an actor. That was a passion of mine. But my father wanted me to be an architect. So I began school at UC Berkeley as an architecture student. But after the second semester, I had to be true to myself. And I came back to Los Angeles, and I told my father, I want to go to New York, study at the Actors Studio, where all the great actors were coming from, Marlon Brando, James Dean, Montgomery Clift. But my father said, that's a fine acting school, but they won't give you a diploma when you graduate from the Actors Studio. And your mother and I want you to have that. So I have a deal to make with you. Here in town in Los Angeles, at UCLA, they have a well-respected acting school. And when you finish there, they'll give you your diploma. Your mother and I want you to have that. So if you go to UCLA, we'll take care of the expenses. If you insist on going to the Actors Studio in New York, you'll have to do it all on your own. And you know what New York is like. Expensive, weather's totally different from California. In the wintertime, it's bone-chilling cold. And in the summertime, it's absolutely sweltifying, if there's such a word. And you have to do it all on your own. I was a practical kid. I went with a subsidy.
Oh, and I bet they're glad you did. Glad you did it, though.
They weren't the happiest. They would have preferred for me to continue studying architecture. But yes, they became happy when they started seeing me on the TV screen regularly. Aww. And I was getting those movie checks regularly.
Amazing, amazing. Iconic, really, like you. What else? What are your other secrets? What are your secrets to longevity?
Secrets to longevity? Well, we were Brad, my husband, and I were runners. We ran marathons, but everything has its downside. I had a running accident that required surgery. I have a recurring problem with my feet. And I'm going to have another surgery here. Oh, yeah. So I'm walking with a cane. Mm-hmm. But I love running, and I hope to get back to the point where at least I can enjoy walking without a cane.
You will. I know you will.
And the book is about running, too.
Really? Okay.
I've been running since my teenage days, but I joined a gay running club. And that's where I met Brad, a running club called LA Front Runners. Front Runners is all over the country, a gay running club. And I joined it, and I met Brad. He trained me for my first marathon. And the book is all about both the challenges and the discipline and the determination to finish involved with running. And here I am.
Excellent. When you and Brad aren't working or running or writing or advocating, what do you guys like to do to relax?
Well, we enjoy what we do. I'm paying the price for it. You know, I've got foot problems, and I've got surgery coming up. But what we like to do is we're also theater people. I am an actor. I'm usually on stage or before the cameras. But even if I'm not, I enjoy being in the audience, and particularly in this town, New York City, going to Broadway plays, going to off-Broadway plays, going to some two-bit theaters off in Brooklyn. And that it's a very fulfilling life that we have, enjoying being here.
What's your biggest life lesson?
I suppose I've shared it with you. We live in a country that has a wonderful system called democracy, but democracy also is probably the most difficult form of government, because we have to be responsible for it. We have to actively participate. And many people are lazy, and they're not good citizens. And sometimes wrong people get elected to office, as we are experiencing now. And so I'm here to urge all Americans that being an American is a challenging state, and you have to take on the duties of an American citizen. Know the issues, know the candidates, volunteer and participate. Contribute to the success of that campaign, and then ultimately even offer yourself as a candidate for whatever office, city council, local dog catcher if you're an animal lover. But we have to participate in our society. America is made up of people who give of themselves.
What would your current self tell your younger self?
I wouldn't play that game, because I'm glad that with the life I lived, and I am who I am today because of all of the of what I learned about life within the closeted life. And first of all, it's impossible. I can't teach the young me, because how do you do that? I didn't know me older. You gain the wisdom and the experience, and you become who you are. So every moment of your life is important, and you benefit from it. And I am who I am today because I was who I was then.
I love it. That's a great, great answer. Well, your book, I know it's going to be a goodie. Can't wait to read it. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. Such an honor and a pleasure to have you.
To see more of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, Life Minute TV.